Hey, welcome to another Reunion Roadmap interview segment. This is Al McCarn. Today, we are traveling to Ephrata, Pennsylvania to catch up with Barry Miller, the author of the 7 and 50 Rhymes blog. And Barry, it has been a long time since we have talked. Last time, I think we talked about your book, Know the Time, Change Your World. And it's been about 7 years since you published that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. The actual date on the book itself was Feast of Tabernacles in 2015, which, you know, as far as I can tell, is where the cycle starts again, as far as the Shemitah cycle. And so that was the reason that date was on it. It actually came out, I had copies of it that summer and was handing it out earlier than that. But that's the official release date.
Yeah. Now, what I appreciated about the book when I read it was you have helped introduce me and whoever reads your book to the 7 and 50 year cycles. Now, we are in a Shemitah year, the seventh sabbatical year, according to Leviticus 25. I would be very interested to hear your thoughts on the Jubilee year or the Yovel year. That one, there's controversy because the nation of Israel really hasn't kept the Jubilee since the Assyrian and Babylonian exiles. So are we about to enter the 50-year cycle? We'll see. But the important thing about what you've done, Barry, is you're highlighting these cycles and making an effort to give us practical steps to walking them out, to aligning with the times and seasons of our Creator. Did I get that right?
That's correct. Yeah, that is correct. And what I think is important is to at least get in your head the fact that every 7 years, there's a reset of some sort. And also every 50 years, there's a reset of some sort. And that just because it hasn't been counted for millennia, that 50 is still out there, in my view. And one of the things that I noticed early on was that even though it wasn't being counted to the best I could tell, and I have more to say about that in a minute, I could see rhymes, I thought, in 50 and 100 year patterns. And the first one that stuck out to me, and you might like this, and it doesn't mean that 1869 or 1969 were something specific on the Jubilee calendar. But it turns out that, you know, we went to the moon in 1969 in July. And you know what we did 100 years earlier? We drove the last spike in the Transcontinental Railroad. It's like, that's the moonshot of 100 years earlier. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, these 50-year patterns are in place. And so I've done some research. Actually, Aaron Lavi just put out a book on the 7-year cycle in the Shemitah. And he pointed out something I wasn't aware of. You realize why this is a Shemitah year as far as the Hillel calendar goes. This is a Shemitah year because 5782 is evenly divisible by 7. So if being evenly divisible by 7, that's why it's a Shemitah year. But that means there's never been on the Hillel calendar a 50-year Jubilee. You follow me?
Huh. Say that one more time.
Okay. 5782 is the Hebrew year, right?
That it is.
If you divide it by 7, it breaks down evenly and sets in sevens. That's why it's a Shemitah year. It doesn't. If you put it in a calculator, you don't get any decimal points on the number that comes up.
Huh.
Okay, that's why it's a Shemitah year. But that also tells you that they haven't counted 50s since then. I'll just do it here real quick. So
yeah.
5782 divided by 7 equals 826 even. Now, if I do 5783 divided by 7, it comes up 826.142857.
Okay, so if we're going by the Hillel calendar date of 5782,
right,
that means this would have been the 826th Shemitah year since the creation of the world.
Yes.
Or at least since the count started, or something like that.
Or something like, or whatever the method they use. But the point is, there's no method for counting 50 in that, if that's the case.
Huh. Well, no wonder there's controversy. I mean, we've just been talking 5 minutes and we are launching into something.
Yeah, we're already there, aren't we?
Yeah. So, but, you know, Barry, it's interesting you mentioned the 1869 to 1969 bookends. Let's look at it that way. Here's another thing I want you to just put into your mind, because as a historian, I have thought about this. And at the risk of being too Amerocentric, well, by golly, I grew up in the United States of America. What do you expect?
I get that.
You know what else happened in 1869?
Tell me.
Okay. The Alaska Purchase.
Oh, okay.
The United States on the 30th of March, 1869, purchased Alaska from the Russian Empire. Now, from an Ephraimite perspective, and from one who is looking for the restoration of all Israel, and I read things about being scattered to the four corners of the earth and as far as the east is from the west, to paraphrase Psalm 103, you know what? The two world empires that kissed in Alaska, which span about as far as you can get from Jerusalem going east or west, are Russia and the United States of America.
Sure.
And so on March 30th of 1869, they signed this agreement transferring sovereignty of Alaska from the Empire of the East to the Empire of the West. Now, does that mean that we entered a time when, you know, the tribes had been scattered as far as they're going to be, and then the rubber band snaps back and they begin returning?
Well, let me get back to 1869 a minute. I don't have any, I don't see 1869 as a jubilee or anything associated with the jubilee. All I see is that there's a 50-year pattern there, you know, that there's rhymes in it, all right? I mean, for me, just to get it out on the table, I believe the jubilees fall on 29 and 79 in our current calendar. And I believe Yeshua was, it was the fall of 0029 when Yeshua read from Isaiah and declared a favorable year of the Lord. That's what Eusebius said, and that's really the pattern that I see fall through here. So we may get into that or not get into that, but what I wanted to get to was that as I wrote this book, Know the Chime Changer World, I've made it pretty clear to everyone that, you know, if you unwind your debt and try to be as out of risk as possible by the end of the seventh year, you're going to be okay. You'll be in pretty good shape. That's a practical way to use this information. That theme runs pretty heavily through my book. And what happened to me, Al, was that as I started over the last year or so to think about the 50, and I started to realize that if 2029 is the upcoming Jubilee, then this coming set of sevens is actually the seventh set of sevens. Follow what I'm saying there? It began to kind of weigh on me, because that was the one place in the cycle where I had a hiccup in my mind. And that hiccup was 1973-74.
The great oil embargo, the resignation of President Richard M. Nixon, we move off the gold standard in the United States, the advent of the petrodollar. That's 72 to 74.
Exactly. And it didn't really seem to fit quite with the Jubilee cycle. In other words, yes, it would. If you were out of debt in 72, that was a good idea, no doubt about it. You know, but I couldn't have told you that you should go risk on in 1973. You know, if you'd gone risk on in 1973 and taken some risk, you probably got clobbered pretty hard in the oil embargo in 74, unless you happen to be going in the, you know, the oil industry for some reason. But I mean, it was certainly a time of shaking and a time of, you know, what happened to our culture. And if you remember, I mean, my father and grandfather, and probably your father and grandfather, they just assumed 25 cent gas would be around forever. I mean, we had won World War II and we're entitled to 25 cent gas. You know, how it was, you know, like, you know, those big Chevy engines pulling big travel trailers. That's what we did. You know, that was who we were. And all of a sudden, you know, gas was double if you could find it.
Right.
And that particular part of the cycle has bothered me for many years. Like, what's going on there? What's happening there? And so that's really what drove the missing mana article on my website, is I started to ponder that and ask myself, what is really going on here?
Yeah. Now, let me talk about that article, the missing mana moment, and you published it on April 17th of 2022, this year, and it is on your 7 and 50 Rhymes blog. So the website, 7, the number 7, and A-N-D, 50, 5-0, Rhymes, 7and50rhymes.com, just to make sure the audience knows what we're talking about. And just go there and look for the missing mana moment, and you can read what Barry has said. Now, Barry, this was an eye-opening blog post for me as well, for the reasons that you have shared. You know, I'm thinking of 1973, 74 as well. And if we look at what happened with Israel there, Yom Kippur War in 1973, yes. 6 years after the Six-Day War, that incredible event of Israel regaining control of the holy city of Jerusalem and the biblical heartland. And it looks like they're on the verge not only of losing that, but of losing the whole nation with the Yom Kippur War. But then we come to 1979. You may talk about this. And what happens to Israel in 1979?
Yeah.
Camp David Accords, peace treaty with Egypt. Yeah. So let me stop talking, and you can tell us some more about what did you find that prompted you to write this missing mana moment article?
Well, so I began to realize that I had potentially, I would be misleading my readers. If they come into the end of 2022 and, you know, we get to this fall and things are bad, which at this point kind of looks like they might be, that everybody might go, oh, well, this is a good time to take some risk, okay? Because, you know, Barry said so in his book, you know, as long as you're out of debt at the end of the seventh year. But I was still bothered by what had happened 50 years previous in the 70s. And I'm starting to ask myself, well, does the 50-year cycle play here somehow? And so I wasn't really thinking about the mana story at the moment. I was just kind of looking at the 50-year patterns. And what the first one that I ran across, which I actually talk about second in the blog post, but the first one I ran across was a book called When Money Dies. The gentleman's name is Adam. I'll have a look at it here. Adam Ferguson. And Adam describes what happens to Germany in the early 1920s and how everybody expects Europe to recover from World War I. And Germany's always been a great economic engine. And of course, France and Britain are going to put a lot of reparations on Germany after World War I, but they think Germany can easily pay it. And Germany pretends to pay it, you know, but they do it with printed money. And of course, we get the stories of the Weimar Republic and going to the store with a wheelbarrow of money to get a loaf of bread and all that thing. But ultimately, what it amounts to is Germany destroyed their economy completely with printed money. And they destroyed all Europe's economy as well, because they were a big player in Europe. And this was really the place where the United States becomes a powerhouse, kind of a result of Europe really falling on its nose at that point. But my point was that this all happens in that 23-24 at a moment when nobody really expects this to happen. It takes them off guard. And so then I went back and I said, well, what happened 50 years earlier than that? And I went back to the 1870s. And what I found there was, again, there was a bump in the road. And again, it was after the Schmidt cycle in 1873-74, and again it was a financial scenario where, you know, we had discovered a lot of gold and a lot of silver in the West in the 1800s, but what few people realized, we had discovered a whole mountain in Nevada that was silver, and that silver was messing up New York and London. Alexander Hamilton had put in place 16-1 gold to silver ratios. And if they left gold to silver ratio 16-1, the silver was just going to swamp the market in the minds of the powers that be in New York and in London. And so they snuck a bill through Congress that to this day is called the Crime of 1873, which for all intents and purposes took silver out of being a currency. You could still buy and sell silver, but instead of it being worth a dollar, it ended up being worth like 40 cents. And what that did was that created tight monetary conditions, and that created a huge deflationary spiral. But it all happened so kind of surreptitiously that nobody really understood what was happening to them. So ultimately what happened after I had those three stories, this 1973, 1923, and 1873, I started to realize there was a biblical pattern. And the biblical pattern was the manna from the seventh day, that the seventh day of manna, you would go out looking for manna if you hadn't gathered double in day six, and that manna wasn't there to be found. You know, you got it told them through Moses they were to gather double, and there wouldn't be any manna on the seventh day, but it tells us that some went out to look for manna, and it wasn't there. Well, here we are, and it's the same scenario. Our fathers went looking for 25-cent gas, and it wasn't there. You know, it was the missing manna at that moment. And so what I'm saying to everyone now is we potentially have a situation where 2-3 years from now, we might find ourselves in a situation where something we expect to be there, that's always been there, might go missing. It won't be a stock market collapse or a bust like maybe we've been used to seeing, but more along the lines of something just goes missing, which really messes us up economically. So that's the caution I'm giving everyone at this point about the cycle.
I think it's a very good caution. Now, thinking as the political and military historian, with every year that you've mentioned, I'm thinking of other events. You know, 1873-74, the U.S. Grant administration was racked with scandal, including the Teapot Dome scandal that brought down several of his cabinet officers. We don't say ministers in the United States, secretaries. And then 1923-24 and so on, as the German Empire is being dismembered and the Weimar Republic is coming into being, and you mentioned the reparations from the Treaty of Versailles ending World War I, you know, Germany didn't pay that off until 2010 or 2012. But yes, rampant printing of money, and concomitantly, at the same time, the San Remo Treaty of 1923 is what dismembered the Ottoman Empire and transferred Palestine to Great Britain as a mandate. Britain, which had come behind the idea of a Jewish homeland in Palestine with right. The Balfour Declaration. The Russian Empire was dismembered. The Russian Civil War was going on, and atheistic communism was rising there. So that's 1923-24 going all the way up to 1929, crash of 29, global depression. And then I think 50 years ahead, further on, you know, the world is changing there as well. We get to the height of the Cold War. We have in the United States an embattled president, the first one ever to be impeached, Richard Nixon. Well, almost impeached, excuse me. Andrew Johnson was impeached in 1869.
Right.
And Richard Nixon resigned before he could be impeached. And who came to the presidency? Gerald R. Ford, a president who was never elected.
Right.
Because Nixon's original vice president, Spiro Agnew, had to resign under a cloud because he had done some naughty things. Gerald Ford was a senator from Michigan who was appointed as vice president under the 25th Amendment, by President Nixon. He is the one who became president in 1974, finished out that term, and following him came Jimmy Carter of Georgia. And from 1977 to 81, when Ronald Reagan was in power, it was one disaster after another for the Carter administration. Just one disaster after another. The only, gave away the Panama Canal. That raised some eyebrows and anger. There was stagflation. Yep. You know, stagnant economy with rising inflation. Everything was costing more. Your dollar was worth less. There was the Iranian hostage crisis when in 1979, the Iranian Revolution happened and the U.S. Embassy in Tehran was stormed and many U.S. Embassy workers were kept for 444 days as hostages. Then we had the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, 1979. You know, the only bright spot of the Carter administration was the Camp David Accords, with Jimmy Carter brokering that peace between Egypt and Israel. Well, okay, so let's go forward to here we are, 2022. Barry, I'm seeing headlines about the Fed raising interest rates 75 points, three quarters of a point. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing rampant inflation. I'm seeing a presidential administration that half of the country considers illegitimate. I'm seeing an Iranian regime that is on the verge of a nuclear weapon if they don't have one already, and the world turning against Israel and the war drums are beating day by day. I'm seeing a change in the global geopolitical system where the American century is over. What's next? The Chinese century? The Chinese-Russian-Iranian century? I don't know, but it sure does look like we have come to a 50-year cycle of transition.
Yeah, that is actually, you know, what I think is coming. However, I think we have a seventh set of 7 years here in front of us before we get to that jubilee. Just to go back to why I think 2979 is a jubilee, for me, it started simply with, you know, reading Deuteronomy and Leviticus and then saying, well, where is this? Way back in 1991. And the first three dates I came up with, as amazing as it is, was the fall of 29, the fall of 79, the fall of 87. And the fall of 87 was the one that I remembered the most because in the fall of 87, I had just bought a house and I just made a deal to buy a business. And I was in hock up to my eyeballs. And on October 19th, 1979, the stock market dropped 22.5% in one day. And I remember watching the TV that night and asking myself, are the Millers just unlucky? That was my response. Because you see, my grandfather, who had been orphaned as a young, very young man, had fought his way into a position to buy a farm in the late 1920s, only to lose it in the Great Depression. And so I was thinking about my grandfather that night and saying, am I just about to repeat my grandfather's scenario? Because my grandparents lived very close as a result of that upturn, as many did who went through the Great Depression. And what I found, though, was that, you know, Deuteronomy 31:10 tells us very clearly that the end of the seventh year is at the Feast of Tabernacles. And so I knew that this remission of debt was in the fall. I didn't know what year it was, but I knew it was in the fall. And so the first two dates I connected to it were the fall of 29 and the fall of 87. But then I had a problem, like, okay, how do I connect them? They're 58 years apart. And the only thing I come up with is 29-30 is a jubilee, 79-80 is a jubilee. That makes 87 the end of the seventh year in the first cycle. Now, that's a lot of numbers, and it's going to be hard for you to think through that maybe. But the point was, I wanted to know at that point, what happened in the fall of 1979 economically? And you just talked a little bit about Jimmy Carter. So Jimmy Carter appoints Paul Volcker to the Fed that summer of 79. In the summer of 79, if you wanted to build a house in some parts of the United States, you had to give the contractor the money before you started because he had to buy everything before the inflation caught him. He couldn't build it and buy as he built it or inflation would wreck his price. So you had to give him give him money up front and he'd build your house. That's how inflation was running. And Volcker was doing everything he could think of that get rid of that inflation, but he didn't know what to do about it. And on October 6, 1979, he called a meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, and that was a Saturday morning, and it also happened to be, I think, one of the first days of Tabernacles. And they put out a memo that nobody quite knew what to make of, but it basically said, we will no longer control the interest rates. We will now just control the amount of money in the system, which basically meant we're going to turn the tap shut, you know, just close it. And over the next 3 months, interest rates went to 20%. And, you know, everything that happened to that we remember about Paul Volcker squeezing inflation out of the system, which is somewhat similar to what's going on now, although hopefully not to the same degree. But that's what happened in 79. And that gave me three data points early on, 29, 79, 87. And then that from that point on, I said, I'm going to do what I can to be out of debt in 94. 2001, 2008, 2015, 2022. That was just how I thought about it. I didn't have the Hillel calendar or anything we talked about earlier. I was just looking at it from the standpoint of what I was seeing economically in the history books, comparing it to Deuteronomy 15 and Leviticus 25. So that's why I think we're sitting here at the beginning of the seventh set of sevens and finishing up the sixth set of sevens, really.
What then are the practical considerations that you would suggest?
Well, I simply want people to be aware that we may be facing a missing manna moment in 23, 24. And I just don't want people to think that, hey, the market's down hard here. And when we get to November, I'm going to go full in or whatever, you know, that you understand that there may still be a missing manna moment in front of us. And, you know, really, when it comes down to it, with what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, that manna may actually be wheat. That may actually be food, you know, who knows what it's going to be. Obviously, it doesn't always take the same pattern. And I don't know, but I just felt impressed that I needed to put this out for people, especially for my readers, that they understand that don't go full risk on in December this year. You know, be awake, be aware of what could be coming at us because of this scenario.
In other words, that which we have expected before, what we could have counted on, may not be there. Things may be
different. Be aware, be awake, and be aware that could be the case. Yes.
Okay. You know, Barry, 20 years ago, I read a book called The Final Quest by Rick Joyner. It was my introduction to dreams and visions. And one thing that Rick said in the book, and this was a lengthy vision that he had received in the 80s for the end of the age, what's happening to the church at the end of the age. But a lot of images from what he shared have stuck with me over the last two decades. One of them was economic unrest. And he had seen a picture of people walking off a cliff. And that's the people who were proceeding through the economy in the way that they always had. And it was cloudy and foggy, and it was hard to see their way forward, but they just moved as they had before and ended up walking off the cliff. Now, there were some who were on their knees moving forward with caution, and they found the paths that would take them down the cliff to safety. Now, his interpretation of this is how the people of God should act, is with humility on your knees, asking the Lord what step to take next. I think that's sound counsel, regardless what you may think of Rick Joyner and his end times prophetic analysis. No, that's just sound advice at any time. And as I'm looking at the incredible chaos and transition out there right now, with broken supply chains and political, military, economic, social unrest, how can the people of God move forward at all if we are not on our knees, humbly asking him for guidance with every single step? And I hear that counsel in what you're telling us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I don't want to in any way lessen that counsel. I think that's really, really important. I will say, however, and this is just my observation of the household of faith, we're conservative. Mm-hmm. we're cautious. That's who we are. And what I want to point out is that, you know, having taken some risk in 2002, 2003, with an eye to being, you know, deleveraged by 2007 was a good idea. And again, to take some risk in 2009, 2010 to be deleveraged by 2015 was a good idea. And again, to take some risk in 2016, 2017 and be deleveraged for 2022 was a good idea. And that also is what I want to tell people is, you know, you don't always be scared of your own shadow. You know, be like Joseph and know when to stick your neck out there and when to say, this is my moment, I'm going to shine. All I'm really saying, and that's kind of what I said in the book as much as, you know, take that risk, right? And all I'm saying here is, give it a couple extra years here. This one worries me. This one has a pattern that's a little different than the other. This is a seven. Just be aware of this missing mana pattern and adjust accordingly.
Yeah, I think that's the best we can do.
Right.
You know, it's not a good idea to give specifics and details and spin the scenarios. All we can say is, we are in unprecedented times. You know, even those of us who are over 50 years old, these are unprecedented times. So, but there are opportunities. And that's another thing that you emphasize in your book. In fact, you were just talking about that. There are opportunities there.
Right.
Any suggestions on how to find those?
Yeah, well, okay. So think this through for me. I mean, you're a military guy. You're a historical guy. I'm going to ask you, if we get a missing mana moment around the world that has to do with food stuff, are we not going to move borders of countries, especially in the Far East, where the food that we're talking about being missing is what's coming out of Russia and Ukraine?
Right.
Are we not going to see borders move?
That is something I have thought about a lot. And in fact, to go back to Rick Joyner's, it's actually a trilogy. The Final Quest was the first book of that series. When he's talking about this end time chaos, he is seeing wars among nations as they're fighting for dwindling pool of resources. So yes, I would expect borders to move. You know, the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022 is shocking to us because such a thing has not happened since, when was the last time? World War II?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Now, we could talk about wars of conquest and revolutions, say, in Eritrea and Ethiopia, but that's different from Russia and Ukraine. We can talk about the Arab-Israeli wars. Yes, they have global implications. But, you know, here we are talking about, as you said, moving borders in a major way. You know, the Russian annexation of Crimea in 2014 shocked the world because it was just that kind of moving a border. We could call it blatant aggression, naked aggression. We could call it that. We could also say, you know, the Russians have a legitimate claim to Crimea. We'll leave that argument for others. Fact is, it has happened, and I think we're going to see some of it happening again. Even now, as you and I are talking, in the headline, there's speculation of China and Taiwan. Are we going to see that happen? Again, the Middle East with Israel against Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, Syria, and with Arab allies, or Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states going to be fighting on the Israeli side this time? Who knows? And the European Union is exceedingly vulnerable due to this Ukraine war and their policies. And right now, I'm seeing a United States that is not in any position or doesn't have the willpower or both to step in and mediate with power as we have before. So moving of borders, yes. And with moving of borders, yeah, that just changes the rules of the game completely.
Right.
Yeah. And we haven't seen it on this scale since World War II.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a speculation, you know, if there's a group of people who are going to be able to feed themselves and then feed their neighbors, that may very well move borders just all by itself.
Right.
You know, which is kind of how I'm sitting here looking at Israel saying, you know what, they're going to feed their citizens and they'll also feed their neighbors if their neighbors are open to that.
Right. Another way to look at it is we're seeing a contraction and a drawing in of the sphere of influence and the sphere of the possible. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas the United States through NATO and our allies, we have had a global reach. Well, no, now it's going to be regional.
Right.
And it may be sub-regional. You know, we saw a generation ago the Soviet Union disintegrate. So that went from being global to regional and sub-regional. So are we going to see the same thing with the United States? I mean, Barry, I don't like to think of this, but what if you in Pennsylvania and I in North Carolina end up being in different countries? But we haven't moved.
Yeah, that's a possibility, although, you know, it looks to me more like the middle of the country versus the coast. But anyway, you know, the division seems to be more coastal versus the center of the country in that sense. But are you familiar with the gentleman by the name of Peter Zeihan?
I'm sure I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with his work.
He just published this book. It's called The End of the World is Just the Beginning.
Yeah.
And you know, his arguments really are along the lines that the demographics of the industrialized world is really collapsing. And America is, again, the best of the worst, if you will. Our demographics is better than most industrialized countries. But, you know, his arguments are along the lines that these places will see disruption, and America is coming home, even though we've got all the carrier groups and everything. We really don't want to patrol the oceans anymore for everybody. And, you know, it's just that whole scenario of letting regional wars fight themselves out, and we're just not going to stick our nose in them anymore. Whether that turned out to be the case or not, I don't know. But I just see borders moving, especially if we get a quote unquote missing manna moment. And yeah. I encourage anybody to take a look at Peter's work if you get a chance.
Peter Zeihan, and how do you spell his name?
His last name is Zeihan.
Okay.
And he's got a body of work out there that's very interesting. He's a geopolitical strategist. I wouldn't call him a believer, but I know his mother's an evangelical. I've figured that out from listening to him. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's where we are.
Well, Barry, as I'd like to bring it back to practical things that the audience can think about, other than fear.
Yes, exactly.
There is always opportunity. You know, there's that story of Peter and the apostles in the boat on the sea with the storm. Yeshua comes out. Peter gets out of the boat and walks on the water as long as he's looking at Yeshua. But when he takes his eyes off and begins to look at the circumstances, then he sinks.
Right.
Now more than ever, we need to acquire and maintain a kingdom focus. When Judea fell, when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans, there were many survivors. And the people of God who were looking for the kingdom and had that focus, they found the provision that he gave. When Rome fell in the fourth century and all the civilization collapsed, there were many survivors. And God's people with the kingdom focus, looking to see where the opportunities and the provision were, they came through.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that this whole idea of the 7 and 50 plays to my mind is because of the Joseph story back in Genesis, that second half of Genesis, where we have a scenario where, you know, Egypt is really going into a famine. There's going to be a famine. But Joseph knows ahead of time some fundamental understanding. And he understands the 7 years in one way or another. And the point I'm trying to make is that I want those of us in the household of faith to be thinking about the 7 years with an eye towards trying to do what it was that Joseph did for those around us. And he did it for not only his brothers, he obviously did it for the Egyptians first. And he was a benefit to the whole world. That blessing that Abraham was called to fell on Joseph to be a blessing to all nations. And so I see that story in the second half of Genesis speaking to our age, and we need to understand how to function in the 70s and in the 50s.
Amen. Well said.
And also, I would add that if you count the Omer to Pentecost, two chapters later from Leviticus 23, we have instructions to count the 50 years.
Yes.
So if you're counting the Omer, the reason the rabbi said we're not counting the 50 years anymore is because we can't go back to our land. Our land has been taken from us. There's nothing to go back to. But the instruction is very clear. Count the Omer, count the 50. If we counted the 50, we might find out some things we didn't know. And that's what I want to, I want everyone to begin to count 50s and look at 50s. Look for them. They're going to teach you something. They're going to surprise you.
That they will. And we've just talked a little bit about some of the surprises that you and I have seen. So, well, your book, Know the Times, Change Your World. Are you thinking of a second edition now that you understand the missing man a moment a little better?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. I'm not sure. It hasn't bubbled up in me that I had to. I had to publish the missing man a moment that I had to do, just like I had to publish the book. Do I have to publish something on the 50-year jubilee? Maybe I will as we get further into this next set of sevens. I do see it becoming more and more important. The 50, the more I study it, the more I realize that the 50 is missing and the 50 is Joseph's. Let me tell you why. Do you remember that Jacob blesses the boys and the Ark Scroll Tanakh in its translation says that they will swarm like fish?
Right. The Melah HaKoyim.
Yeah. Of course, you know, we know that the sign of the fish was in early Christianity. But the letter Nun in its Paleo Hebrew was also a fish.
Right.
And its gematria number is 50. And if my mathematics are right and I study it properly, when I look at the eight sets of 7 years in the second half of Genesis, starting with Rachel, Jacob working 7 years for Rachel. There's eight defined sets of seven, starting with that 7 years for Rachel. And right in the middle of it is where Joseph goes into slavery at 17. And the pattern tells me that that was a 50-year jubilee. Joseph's story is connected to 50.
Yeah.
This is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be involved in this 50, in this restoration of the 50.
You're speaking my language, brother.
Now, listen to me here. Listen carefully, Meow.
Yes, sir.
If Yeshua declared a favorable year of the Lord in 0029, then the fall of Samaria in 721 BC was exactly 750 years earlier.
Well, how about that?
And that's when the rabbis said they stopped counting the 50. It may have just been too painful at that point. If they realized, if that was the jubilee and they knew it, and all of Leviticus 6's curses fell on them at that moment, it was just really hard to count 50 after that.
Well, I can certainly see that. And of course, the full revelation will come later when Messiah's returned.
Absolutely.
But your point about we have responsibilities to prepare the kingdom for his coming, you're absolutely right. I agree.
And we have the instruction to count 50.
That we do.
We're instructed to count 50. So what you and I just did was we just counted 50. We just counted from 0029 and the declaration of the favorable year of the Lord. We counted 50 back to 721 BC.
Yeah.
and we know what happened there. So we should be counting them forward as well.
Yeah, let me just say to the audience, if you have not thought this way, that's okay. A lot of people are not wired to think historically, but you know, the stories of our ancestors are instructive. So I would just encourage you to look into them. Look into your family story. As Barry, as you have just said about your grandfather, sure. You know, these cycles do manifest in our families. And, you know, I could speak about my grandfather as well, who lost everything in 1929. I could think about 50 years before that, after the Yankees came through Alabama and they lost everything again. You know? Yeah, so, you know, take this and prayerfully put it before the Lord, folks. Barry's onto something here. And it's good counsel to understand the times and seasons of our God. And I think this is a great entry point to do so. Well, Barry, thanks very much for sharing your heart and bringing us up to date. Again, it's been too long since you and I have talked. Hopefully, Absolutely. It won't be so long next time. I think it would be good to get an update from you after we have a little more time pass and you can see what's going on.
Sure. Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Folks, again, check out Barry's website, 7and50rhymes.com. So thanks for listening. And Barry, thanks for sharing your heart.
You're welcome.